Hello and welcome to the Tumor Immunology Roundtable. Today is February 17th, 2008. This edition is presented by me, Pedro Miguel Alves. This podcast aims to present you regularly research articles on immunology and tumor immunology in a journal club format. Today, I'm going to present you a research article that describes the identification of a cryptic epitope from alternative open reading frame of the gene ENV, ENV of the simian immunodeficiency virus. This peptide is presented to T-CD8 lymphocytes and is able to induce strong dominant immune responses, but as you will later discover, these responses have a small significance for the animals that are infected with SIV, namely because the virus develops mutations that specifically target this epitope and renders it not immunogenic. This article is called AIDS virus-specific CD8 T lymphocytes against an immunodominant cryptic epitope, select for viral escape, to the Journal of Experimental Medicine in 2007, volume 204, page 2505. This paper is submitted by Manes and collaborators from the Wisconsin National Primate Research Center in the United States. As usual, I will make a short introduction to some concepts and immunological background necessary for the understanding of the article, and this time is related to the way how T lymphocytes recognize antigens. All nuclear cells, with some exceptions, of the human organism express at their cell surface molecules that present to the lymphocytes in circulation fragments of proteins that are produced in the interior of the cell. These molecules presenting these fragments are molecules belonging to the major histocompatibility complex, also known as MHC, and they can be divided in several groups. But the ones relevant for T lymphocytes are the MHC class 1 and 2. The MHC class 1 molecules present mainly fragments of proteins or oligopeptides that belong to proteins expressed in the endoplasmatic reticulum or in the cytoplasm of the cell. MHC class 1 molecules present these fragments at the cell surface to TCD8 lymphocytes. If a TCD8 lymphocyte recognizes with its T cell receptor the oligopeptide presented by MHC class 1 molecule, it will attack and destroy the cell presenting this MHC class 1 molecule peptide complex. In the case of MHC class 2 molecules, the peptide fragments are originated in the endocytic compartments of the presenting cell, in this case, endosomes or lysosomes, and therefore these protein fragments are mainly derived from antigens captured out in the extracellular environment. The MHC class 2 molecules present the fragments to these CD4 lymphocytes. The CD4 T lymphocytes that recognize the peptide fragments trigger responses that mediate the development of an establishment of immune responses through production of cytokines. Although the antigen presentation through class 1 or class 2 molecules seems to be compartmentalized, we now know that there are communication between these antigen presentation systems, and endogenous antigens can be also presented by MHC class 2 molecules, and the exogenous endocytose antigens can also be presented by MHC class 1 molecules. The development of the antigen presentation by the immune system appears to have deep roots in the evolutive pressure induced by virus and other pathogenic agents during millions of years of cohabitation and evolution. In fact, the MHC class 1 presentation allowed the detection of viral proteins expressed by infected cells. In the case of MHC class 2 molecules, the evolution pressure seems to have origins in the extracellular pathogenic antigens and toxins that are particularly sampled by specialized blood mononuclear cells, like dendritic cells, macrophages, and other phagocytic monocytes. In this article, we are going to discuss the responses mediated by MHC class I molecules and corresponding T-CD8 lymphocytes. As I told you before, the peptide fragments presented by MHC class I molecules derive from endogenous antigens. These fragments have origin on the degradation of proteins in the cytoplasm of the cell. In fact, sooner or later, if a protein is not rooted for secretion, it will be degraded to its basic components. In fact, as soon that the messenger RNA is translated to a protein, the neoprotein is evaluated by chaperones that signal misfolded or mutated proteins to degradation. Also, ribosomes are also prone to error during their translation process and generate a significant amount of products that are also immediately degraded, the so-called DRIPs, as defective ribosome products. Finally, when a protein ends its lifetime, it is also degraded in a process that is tightly controlled as the case of bad protein accumulation can rapidly lead to toxic effects to a cell. This process of degradation is extremely efficient and involves many proteases, particularly the proteasome that sits in the cytoplasm and is the main proteolytic structure found in the cell. Therefore, as soon as a protein is tagged for degradation, it is routed to the proteasome and chopped to small fragments. The fragments are then reduced to amino acids by other proteases found in the cytoplasm. As I said, the process is very efficient and very rapid. However, there are some fragments that survive this degradation process and are transported to the endoplasmic reticulum where the MHC class I molecule sit waiting for a suitable peptide. If a peptide MHC complex is formed, then this complex is routed to the cell surface for screening by T-CD8 lymphocytes. Therefore, if a cell is infected by a virus, the virus will produce its viral components and consequently the cell proteolytic system generate a series of viral-derived peptides that will be presented at the cell surface. If a viral-specific T lymphocyte detects such infected cell by recognizing the MHC peptide complex, the death of the infected cell is induced. In most situations, that's what really occurs. But viruses have also developed strategies to escape this immune system control that target the antigen itself or even the process of antigen presentation. The paper that here I present shows a particular strategy that in fact affects a peptide derived from a viral gene that derives from alternative open reading frame that usually is not coding for protein and most likely is the result of a translation problem. In the paper, the authors face one evidence. One particular MHC class I haplotype is associated with the control of the SIV infection in monkeys, the haplotype MAMU-B17. If that is true, it should be interesting to identify all possible MAMU-B17 restricted peptides that are able to induce T-cell responses to further understand how immune responses are developed in the animals that control the viral infection, the so-called elite controllers. The genome of SIV, like of the HIV, of the human immunodeficiency virus, contains several open reading frames leading to the translation of several viral proteins necessary for the buildup and spread of the virus. Therefore, peptides are generated from all these proteins. The authors got interested particularly in peptides that could be generated from other reading frames other than the ones already defined as existent and that could justify the control of the virus infection by these elite controllers. Therefore, they introduced all the possible translated protein sequence from alternative reading frames into a software program that predicts the binding affinity of these peptides to MHC class 1 molecules, and this is the case of the haplotype MAMU B17. As noted, binding capacity is a critical factor for peptide to bind to MHC class 1 molecules and induce detectable T cell responses. The article starts with the evidence. 9 out of 13 animals, rhesus macaques, that control the replication of SIV, SIV MAC239, express the haplotype MHC class 1 MAMU B17. The authors decide to map all epitopes possible to be presented by MAMU B17, especially from the alternative reading frames. Using a prediction software, they identify a peptide that they call CRW9 that is predicted to bind strongly to MAMU B17. This peptide is localized in the frame +2 of the gene ENV, ENV, downstream of a splicing area as shown in figure 1, and it should be not be coding. The authors, based in these binding affinity characteristics, test if they are in the blood of the animal or the animals lymphocytes specific of this peptide. By ELISpot assay, the authors find that a significant number of animals present considerable amounts of interferon gamma secreting lymphocytes. The authors define an arbitrary threshold of detection of 50 spots per million PBMCs. 14 out of 20 animals presented the MAMU B17 haplotype and visually infected present more than 50 spots forming cells per million PBMCs, including two animals that control infection. Interestingly, to note that one animal out of five that are MAMU B17 negative also present above threshold values. All this data is shown in figure 2a. In more detail, for some of these animals, the responses were evaluated, figure 2b and 2c. In figure 2b, the authors compare the responses towards CRW9 with other class 1 peptides derived from SIV by ELISpot. Surprisingly, the peptide shows comparable or even higher responses than other peptides. For example, the animal R95071 that shows a dominant response towards CRW9 peptide. And for those animals that are controls of disease, the authors used tetramers to evaluate the presence of tetramer-positive CD8 lymphocytes, and indeed significant and clearly detectable populations are found. Tetramers are multimers of MHC class 1 molecules of a particular haplotype complex to the peptide of interest, linked together by biotin streptavidin coupled with a fluorochrome, normally phytoerythrin. Tetramers allow the detection of lymphocytes with TCR specific for a particular MHC class 1 peptide complex. In figure 2D, the authors show the relative frequency of lymphocytes specific for the peptide CRW9 in relation to other detected lymphocytes specific for SIV. We can deduce that the frequency of lymphocytes for CRW9 is dominant in relation to other detected frequencies. However, we can't conclude more since we don't know the values for other until now unknown T-cell responses directed to SIV restricted by other MHC class 1 haplotypes. Since such epitope is so immunogenic and mobilizes quite a significant T-cell repertoire, why not all animals that present detectable lymphocytes are protected against the replication of the virus? The authors evaluate if the virus would answer to this immune pressure by creating viral variants, as viral variants are commonly found in HIV and SIV in response to CD8 lymphocyte control. By sequencing the ENV gene in the region of the peptide CRW9, the authors found a particular mutation, tyrosine to cytosine, in the position 6913. This mutation is synonymous for the ENV protein, but for the peptide CR99, it does change the C-terminal amino acid of the peptide from phenylalanine to arginine. As shown in figure 3c, the mutation is clearly more frequent in the ENV gene and in the CR99 area than in other areas of other genes, which support the idea that the virus mutates specifically this area. This fact is surprising and novel for our knowledge, and epitopes derived from alternative open reading frame usually not coding for proteins. What are the consequences of such mutation in immunological characteristics of the peptide? The authors compare the immunogenicity of the peptide in comparison to the native peptide, and they found, as depicted in figure 4a, that the mutated version of the peptide is unable to induce the production of interferon gamma by PBMCs stimulated with the peptide. Interestingly to note that here we can indirectly evaluate the avidity of the lymphocytes for the native peptide, and we can observe that if we calculate the half maximal number of spots generated by the amount of peptide present, we can get an overall avidity of around 1 micromolar. That is a value quite high and shows that lymphocytes require quite a big amount of peptide to be reactive, fact that can impair the recognition of infected cells. In figure 4b, the authors follow the presence of CR99 specific lymphocytes with tetramers in two animals and in parallel monitored the presence of mutations in CR99 area. As is clearly shown, the peak of lymphocytes correlates with the increased dominance appearance of the mutation, and as it becomes frequent, the number of circulating lymphocytes goes down, what can be interpreted as a response to the virus to increase pressure of the immune system focusing the particular peptide. Note, the viral load doesn't suffer particular variations. In figure 4c, the authors showed that indeed the lymphocytes specific for the peptide CR99 can identify virus-infected cells. CD8 negative lymphocytes were infected with the virus wild type SIV-MAC239 or mutated one and incubated with CR99 specific CD8 lymphocytes. The author does not describe how they generated the CR99 specific CD8 T cells, but we can see from the results of the intracellular cytokine staining that the lymphocytes recognize cells infected with a wild-type virus but not with a mutated virus, and that the recognition depends on the presence of MAMU B17 haplotype, as when it is absent, the lymphocytes, the recognition does not occur. I would like to highlight the fact that electronic gating of the positive population of cytokines producing cytokines is not correct, and therefore the frequencies of cytokine-positive T-cells are over-evaluated. It is the first time that I find published such a way of gating that is not correct. I regret that the peer reviewers didn't point this fact. Finally, the authors present the in vitro data of the capacity of the CRW9-specific lymphocytes to reduce the replication of the virus from infected cells. Lymphocytes were co-cultivated with infected cells, and supernatants were evaluated for the presence of the viral RNA. The presence of lymphocytes reduced significantly the number of copies in the case of the virus SIV wild-type infecting MAMU B17 haplotype. So clearly, the lymphocytes are competent to identify wild-type virus and eliminate virus-infected cells. In conclusion, you should retain three very interesting facts from this simple paper. Alternative reading frames or fragments of proteins related to ribosome translation, also known as defective ribosomal products or DRIPs, can be source of immunogenic peptides even from viral gene sources. Such peptides are relevant for the immune system and for the virus itself, as in the current study, the peptide develops, in the current study, the peptide develops dominant T-cell responses in some animals evaluated. Importantly, the virus mutates specifically such peptides to reduce its binding capacity to MAMU B17 haplotype, commonly associated to a viral control in monkeys. Therefore, this paper highlights the interest to map the peptides involved in virus infections like HIV and SIV to, in the future, identify components of the potential vaccine, especially peptides deriving from non-coding gene areas. The paper also supports the emphasis of the strategies of used by virus to escape to the immune control, and the conclusions can be easily extrapolated to other diseases where the immune system plays a considerable role in the disease development, like cancer by immune editing. And like this, we end this podcast edition. Please leave your suggestions, comments, by electronic mail to the Tumi Immunology Roundtable podcast in a single word @lykos.com. See you next time. Bye-bye.